Hello everyone, welcome to this week's Off The Bench. The impending blanks, doubles and the results of the FA Cup fifth round last week meant that over 385,000 managers played their wild card ahead of game week 26. Most of these managers sold their Liverpool assets and were punished. Andy, how did game week 26 treat you?
Unfortunately, I was one of the wild carders in 26, so badly punished. I did sell Salah, I did sell Nunes. It was a very unfortunate outcome, however, we move on and we look forward. And I heard you haven't wildcarded in 26, so I'm very jealous of you, Az. How did your game week go?
Yeah, I mean, I saw the logic of it, and I think anyone who did it will feel a bit aggrieved that Liverpool got that kind of freak result, as we're going to talk about in a bit. But yeah, I mean, my team just didn't really need it, I didn't think. And, you know, I had already had a Brighton player in place. I liked the look of my side. I've got Kane ready as well. There's a few players that I didn't have, but generally speaking, my team looked pretty solid. So I didn't really feel the need to do it. But now I'm looking at people's wildcard teams going into 27, seeing all the Brentford players, seeing all the Brighton players, and thinking, I want to get in some of these guys. So yeah, I think I've got away with it this week. I'm not going to play it this week either, but I'm a bit worried that going forward, you wildcarders might start to pull away from me a little bit. But, you know, it's nice to be a bit different. And I have got Salah in place for Bournemouth, which is where I think we're going to start talking about on this pod. I mean, it was an amazing performance, wasn't it? It was absolutely... I mean, the first half was kind of close. I didn't think, you know, if you watched the first half, you wouldn't have thought Liverpool would run away with it in the way that they did. But it ended up 7-0. Yourself and lots of others wildcarded out Salah and all your assets. How are you feeling about that now? Are you looking to bring any back in for this Bournemouth game?
Yeah, I think there's a lot to unpack what you just said there. You know, the fact that 385,000 managers wildcarded in game week 26, and it was very sort of last minute in the last, you know, few days before the deadline, shows that a lot of us are now engaged and there's more consumption of content when it comes to the FPL world. There's definitely the FOMO factor as well. You know, a lot of teams might have not needed a wild card, but did it anyway. And I don't buy the look back and it was just a unfair result and you got unlucky type of mentality, because I do think upon reflection, a lot of us could have, you know, held that wild card. And moving forward, the idea of a game week 26 wild card was to set up for game week 27, was to set up for the 28 blank, and was to set up for the 29 double. So I think you just have to stick to the plan. It was a 3-4 week sort of wild card. And I don't think you jump on Liverpool assets if you don't have them now. But if you do, such as yourself, as I don't think your situation is that bad, because you have many good single fixture games and maybe you can get away with it for one or two transfers for the Brighton players and possibly for the Brentford players as well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, United, you know, conceded all those goals to Man City, but that was back in game week 9. Looking at the game since then, you know, they played City again. They won that game 2-1. They conceded 3 goals to Arsenal in game week 21. But overall, the defence has been pretty tight. And then, you know, obviously they've won the cup. It was just a really weird game of football in general. So yeah, I think that's the two sides to it. Like you mentioned, it's you know, do you think it was an error to take these players out? Was there signs that, you know, Liverpool were coming back and Salah could score these goals? I don't know. I think it was a tricky one. I mean, I can see why people wildcard. I mean, you know, people had the likes of Nketiah, who hadn't been playing and had a bit of the injury. You know, Tarkowski was brought in by a lot of players, and Everton had been really poor. So I think it's just one of those ones where if you took out your Liverpool players, there's always a risk they can go big at Anfield because that's what Liverpool players can do. But at the same time, I think for the strategy of quite a few people, it was the right thing to do. I think, like you say, though, it's so team dependent, isn't it? The wild card. You've got to look at your team in kind of complete isolation of everyone else to work out if you need it. I mean, what about the wild card this week? If you were wild carding this week, would you go down a completely similar route, or do you think you'd leave a spot for Salah in the team?
I think, again, you should look back into game week 26 and sort of maybe change the mentality of, if you're fixated on doing a game week 27 wild card, there's an opportunity here to hold one more week and really attack the wild card in game week 28, because largely the team you make in a wild card 27 will be very similar to a wild card 26. As you said, there's so many good single fixtures. You know, Liverpool are coming off a 7-0 win, so you'd assume they do very well against Bournemouth. And when you get to a wildcard 28, you can jump on those Leicester assets that many Game Week 26 wildcarders won't have. So there are some key differences there. But in terms of this week, certainly there's going to be FOMO for not having Brighton and Brentford assets.
What about United then? Because how do they kind of respond, do you think, to this this loss? And how does that affect our kind of plans? Because, I mean, a lot of people, you know, have taken out the likes of Shaw. You know, Fernandes had been popular. I think most people have probably kept Rashford, even through the blanks, given that his price has gone up so much and kind of the form that he's been in. I don't think people are going to be looking to get rid of him. But do you think it kind of tempers expectation on some of the other players? I know Fernandes and Shaw are going to be popular kind of after the blank, especially for that double game week. And even this week, I mean, a home game against Southampton, your United players are kind of differentials at this point. Do you have confidence they're going to bounce back?
I think so. I think looking at this Liverpool 7-0 game should be looked in isolation and singularly because it happens, right? I feel like it's an anomaly and, you know, 7-0s don't happen that often. It was a mental warfare. It was kind of feisty game and they just mentally got, you know, collapsed in the second half, basically. So I would assume with, you know, Ten Hag as a coach, there's going to be a little kick on the butt and sort of a revamp for this next game week. And I expect United to come back strong and Rashford to be a great asset in game week 27.
Yeah, I think people are blaming kind of fatigue, aren't they? Lots of games having been played. You know, they've got the Europa League that they're in, all these cup competitions as well. Yeah. They're playing kind of, you know, almost every couple of days. And the squad isn't that big. And, you know, if there is some kind of tiredness and some heavy legs, and then Casemiro doesn't have a great game like he had, I think they can struggle in defence and in attack. But Rashford's an easy hold, isn't he? And yeah. I think the other United players we're going to be considering again kind of in a few weeks when the double comes around. Opposite of United, my team, Brighton, absolutely incredible performance. One of the best I've ever seen. Helped out by West Ham being a bit abject in that. But, you know, it was a kind of a bit of an audition for a lot of people ahead of this double. You know, I know a lot of people wildcarded in quite a few of their assets already, but some might have kept a spot or be debating which one to get. I mean, you've got Matoma in midfield, you've got March and McAllister, three midfielders there as well, all with their different kind of strengths too. You've got Ferguson up top, 4.6 million striker. And then in defence, you've got all the options as well and potentially a new really cheap goalkeeper with Steele as well. How are you shaped up for Brighton players ahead of the double?
Yeah, obviously, because of the wildcard in 26, I'm shaped up really well. Again, in the 26 game week, it was very unfortunate for those that started Marsh over, for example, Matoma or McAllister. You know, believe it or not, your team Brighton is second best in terms of XG per 90 since the restart, game week 17. So elite attacking team. And they're just fun to watch, right? Every single time they're attacking, they're getting goals. So I'm very confident that they will continue to get goals. However, the trick here is deciding who to start and who's going to get the points. But with Game Week 27, Brighton having a double, you want to play all your Brighton assets. If you don't have a wildcard Brighton team, then you have to think about who to bring in. And I think that's going to be a nightmare to deal with because I really don't know who the right pick is out of the three attacking assets. How about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, they all kind of showcased different strengths, I thought, in that game. I mean, March, I think, was very unlucky not to get any returns for people that brought him in. His stats in general, if you're into the underlying stats in terms of expected goal involvement and things like that, March is clear out of the three. He's so involved in so much of our attacking play. We saw glimpses of him kind of, you know, beating players in the box and having shots and doing all the right things. It's just that classic thing with him, which the end product is that there. And it comes and goes with him a fair bit. Matoma for me is the kind of the eye test. Personally, I think he's our best player in the side. I think his quality is just absolutely incredible. He can create something out of nothing. He's more clinical, I think, than lots of other players in our team. But if you're into the stats, he's got the worst underlying stats in that he takes the least shots and has the least kind of estimated kind of goal involvement in out of the side. And then you've got McAllister. McAllister is playing advanced. He's playing in that kind of number 10 role. He's got the penalties, which is absolutely huge as well. And he's on direct free kicks as well and has good underlying stats. So it's just pick your poison, really, isn't it? I like all three. I think Matoma is still the one that I'd go for, but I do really like McAllister as well. But if you've got March, you hold him.
Yeah. To add my two cents here, I think McAllister is actually not genuinely playing the number 10 role. He reminds me of Gundogan's role at times at Man City, where he's sort of playing that number 10, but he's also coming deep playing the number 8, and then also kind of playing a number 9 role at times where he's darting into the boxes and you see Mitoma on the left, you see Marsh on the right, and you know he's going to get a lot of opportunities with these runs into the boxes. So I like McAllister as a pick. I think Mitoma out of the three is the most brilliant footballer in terms of just individual brilliance and ability. And, you know, his dribbling skill set is elite. So I really just like having him in my team, regardless of the stats. Marsh, I think you have to take a look at what we say and the narratives that come with him, which is he gets great attacking stats, underlying stats, but he doesn't actually score as much as he should be scoring. So it's sort of hard to predict when he's going to score. It doesn't fill me with confidence. You just kind of have to get lucky with when he's going to actually get these two goals in one game type of situation. So the picks for me would be Mitoma 1, McAllister 2, and Marsh 3. But this is very reactionary in many ways. And the opposite could be said after this game week. So again, it's hard to pick out of the three.
Yeah, I think I agree with that ranking order as well. I just look at March, I look at those stats and just think this could all... I mean, we saw him get 3 double-digit hauls in 4 games. You know, in game week 17, he got 13 points against Southampton. He blanked against Arsenal. Okay, fair enough, difficult game. But then, you know, came straight back at 11 points against Everton, 19 points against Liverpool, and then blanked twice and then got a 10 against Palace and then blanked twice. He's an all or nothing player, like you say. And that kind of excites me over so many games for him, because I think he could hit kind of big returns in one of those matches, get a double digit and then sort of, you know, eclipse the competition. But I think Mitoma and McAllister are the more likely to hit kind of regular returns. Yeah. And if you can get that kind of drip feed over a while, then I think that kind of just makes them a slightly better option as well. Yeah. It's difficult because, I mean, West Ham just didn't offer anything, did they? I mean, you talked about McAllister's role. He didn't even really have to drop deep that often because Brighton's control in that match was so strong. Are they going to have that control in other games? I mean, it's a good looking double with Leeds and Palace.
Yeah, it's a great point you made because I think the game itself was very easy for Brighton. They were able to sort of navigate through the game really well. I actually watched the game. And just one last thing on Marsh is, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people captained in this week because he could easily be the one with those double-digit returns. And if you look at the game, early in the game, he had one great opportunity that went straight at the keeper. And Mitoma's goal was actually created from Marsh himself. So it's really hard to pick again from the three. This West Ham game was set up perfectly for them. They were playing super deep, you know, like 9-10 men in the box at times, and they kept attacking. The double actually presents a very good two fixtures for them because it's going to be sort of a back and forth type of game. And the stat I mentioned again earlier is since the restart, Brighton are the second best attacking team in the league. So regardless of who they face, even if it's an elite team such as Man City, I still think they'll get attacking returns. So very confident in their picks. And I certainly will captain one of them from Brighton.
Yeah. I mean, just to mention some of the other options as well. I mean, you've got Ferguson up top, who I alluded to earlier. I think he's going to keep his place in the side. I think he's got that kind of goal-scoring touch, but he's also got the ability to link up play really nicely, which is so important to our system, which we see from Undav and Welbeck as well. Welbeck coming on and scoring isn't kind of what you want if you're thinking of taking the punt on Ferguson, but at his price, I think he's still a good pick. And then what about in defence? I mean, Estupiñán looks really good at the wing-back spot. Dunk's probably got the security. Steele as well. Now he looks like he's got the jersey. Who would you be picking from the defence?
I mean, let's talk about Steele, right? You must know, you're the Brighton fan. What happened there? How come Sanchez was dropped? And is this something any Brighton fan expected?
Not really. I think given that we haven't got we have got goalkeepers, but none have really been given too much of a chance to prove themselves, particularly in the league. I think Sanchez made that error a few weeks ago. He hasn't had an amazing season. And I think there's question marks about whether he really fits the style of how Zerbi wants to play, sort of playing out of the back. And Steele seems to be, from De Zerbi's comments, a better fit for the style of play that he's looking to implement. So I think he's got it. I mean, he made a couple of good saves, Steele, in that match. I can't see Sanchez coming back in anytime soon. I do wonder if Steele was to go on a bit of a run of, you know, making a few errors and things, then we might see Sanchez come back in. I think they're basically just competing now for that jersey. But I think in the summer, we could well see a new goalkeeper come in. But if we're looking for a goalkeeper over the next 3 weeks, you know, maybe people like myself who've still got the wild card in play are looking for a goalkeeper. And then, you know, the wild card after game week 29 into 30, we could potentially lose him. I think Steele's a standout. I think he's definitely got the jersey for the next few games.
Wow. Famous last words, as.
It never works out like that, does it?
I do understand why he might have gotten benched. Brighton, obviously, until the West Ham game, had only 3 clean sheets since De Zerbi came into the fold. Mm. So obviously, defensively, they're struggling, but still a surprise nonetheless. And the fact that Steele and Sanchez are now competing for that number one spot makes them very iffy decisions in terms of FPL picks. Mm. I think in Brighton defense, Estupiñán is still the best pick. Very, very attacking. I love the positions he's in. Heat map looks great. Dunk is a safe pick, but it doesn't fill me with that much excitement or confidence. As long as Estupiñán stays healthy, he's the one to go for, in my opinion.
Yeah, we're just not looking for Dunk at set pieces, so there's no real attacking threat with him. I think Webster's got more attacking threat than Dunk, but I think with Colwill around and Veltman, his place in the team isn't completely secured, even though he had a good game against West Ham. So yeah, Estupiñán is the one that I'd go for as well. That's 10 minutes on Brighton, Andy. I mean, I could do longer. We should probably move on. We were great. I think, you know, the message, I think, is going into 27, invest in Brighton, because we've got a good double and we've got a good team. So yeah, and take your pick. We've got plenty of players to pick from. Another good team, well, the best team in the league at the moment, Arsenal. Don't think we can avoid talking about them. I mean, what a game that was. I mean, to go down 1-0 after, what was it, less than a minute? What was it, 10 seconds or something? Absolutely crazy. And then to score in the 98th minute, the winner. Absolute roller coaster for Arsenal fans. Do you reckon they can do it? Can they win it?
It's almost a, you know, fairy tale situation, right? So never say no. There's certainly an opportunity for them to win the title this year. And the team spirit is there as well. And that's a factor that you can't ignore. So we'll see what happens, but still a long ways to go. But Arsenal are elite, as you said, and the best team in the league at the moment in time.
I think they're going to do it. I'm back in the
Was I fence-sitting too much?
Yeah, just a bit. Very, very sensible. What about for FPL though? Because, you know, we've all got Arsenal assets. You know, they've had so many. You know, Nketiah's kind of dropped off the radar a little bit now, which is a shame. But at the same time, Martinelli came back in, but I think a lot of people had sold him and were a bit worried about his minutes. You know, Martinelli, Odegaard, Saka in defence, Zinchenko has been playing well, but a lot of people have gone for Gabriel as well. Ben White came off the bench and scored. There's no double for them coming up, but the fixtures are really nice. I debated selling Odegaard for McAllister. I've already got Matoma and doubling up with a Brighton midfield. I think that might be a way some people are going. Maybe if they've got the, you know, triple Arsenal, they might be looking at losing one of those players for potentially a Brighton or a Brentford asset. Would you recommend that, or do you think we should be sticking with the Arsenal boys?
It's tough. It's the classic two fixtures versus one fixture for an elite team. And we're gonna be in a lot of pain this game week, because I guarantee you a lot of us will be benching the likes of Gabriel, the likes of White, Odegaard, Martinelli, who knows, right? So it's not looking good for wildcarders. With that being said, I wouldn't hop onto their assets right now, because there's doubles to attack. And just the manager that I am, I like to attack the fixtures and try to get, you know, as many doublers as possible. Maybe Brighton is the one to go for over Arsenal assets, but maybe you could consider Arsenal assets over the likes of Brentford assets, for example, or Southampton, Crystal Palace, who also have a double in 27. Arsenal do have a fixture in 28 where a lot of teams blank, so that's a, you know, big advantage to have. But I think around game week 30 is when we're going to start loading off them. And I say that with caution, but it's a tricky one to navigate, because they still have very good fixtures right now, except there's a lot of doubling teams and a lot of teams that have, you know, many good doubles as well. So difficult.
Yeah, I think the thing that puts me off is we talk about kind of double game weeks and how exciting they are. But really, if you compare Arsenal and Brighton over the next 2 weeks, they've got the same amount of fixtures, because Arsenal have got, you know, Fulham this week, and then next week they've got Palace at home. Brighton have got the double this week with Leeds and Palace, but then a blank next week. So if you're looking at it for those 2 weeks, they've got the same game. So suddenly it's Odegaard versus McAllister. Well, you could look at that as a double game week in, you know, across both games for Odegaard. So does that kind of temper it a little bit? I mean, obviously you can use transfers. You could bring Odegaard back in if you wanted to, but I just think everyone listening and both of us as well, we need to pay attention to how our team is shaping up for game week 28. If you're going to use the free hit in 28, don't worry about it. Go wild. Yeah. Get Odegaard out for McAllister because they've got a double again in 29. So, you know, you're going to get loads of extra games. If you're not playing the free hit though, you need to be a little bit more careful. And if you're going to be going down to, you know, seven players by taking an Arsenal player out, maybe it's better to just keep your Arsenal players in. And ride it out.
Yeah. Just one last point. The counter argument to that is that if you look back from, let's say, around game week 18-ish until game week 26, because Brighton had a blank in 25, we really sort of didn't think about their assets for a long time. And then we hopped on all three of them in game week 26. So if it wasn't Arsenal, there was no doubt I would say go for a Brighton asset, even if they have a blank in 28. But because it's Arsenal, it's a really tricky one to navigate because, you know, Arsenal are the best team in the league. So I don't know. I think it's a tough one to decide. But personally, I would go for the fixture in 27.
There you go. We're not sitting on the fence this time, Andy. We're different opinions on that one. I don't think I'll be doing it. Mm. I think I'll probably just keep these Arsenal players in. Okay, we talked about some good teams. Let's talk about some teams that are struggling a little bit, but are still seeing investment ahead of the kind of fixture on that we've got ahead of us. Newcastle, you know, a 2-0 loss to City. I mean, that isn't maybe that surprising given how strong City are, particularly at home. But we have started to see them lose this kind of defensive solidarity that they've kind of been accustomed to. I mean, it's Wolves and then it's Forest and then it's a double. It's a really good looking run of fixtures. I don't think we're seeing too much investment in their attack. We're not sure who's playing out of Wilson and Isak. They're kind of rotating a bit. So Maximan's in and out of the team. Almiron's gone off the boil. So it's defence that we're looking at with the likes of Trippier, with Botman as well. What do you think about that? Have you got double defence? You got double Newcastle defence on the wildcard?
I did. I've had double defence since, I think, around game week 21. As soon as I owned him in game week 21, I got two clean sheets in a row, and then it's sort of been downhill from there. We have to remember from game week 24 to 26, Newcastle had very tough fixtures. And as you said, they just played Man City, so it's not the best fixture to have a clean sheet in. But this is the time we own a double defense for a reason. So from 27 to 29 is when their fixtures get really good. So you just have to make that bet and hope that clean sheets come. Fixtures do breed form in many ways. So I'm expecting a couple clean sheets in the next couple game weeks. But definitely we should temper expectations because their defense is not as elite as it used to be early on after the restart.
Yeah, it's a shame because, you know, they're kind of slipping down the table a little bit. That fourth position they held for so long looked quite secure. And I was with you. I had the double Newcastle defense and they were amazing for me. Mm-hmm. And then Gomez went and got himself banned and missed a couple of games and they were kind of conceding goals and they've obviously lost in the cup final as well. So there's a bit of a cloud kind of over them as they kind of slip. They need to kind of get back to kind of where they were before, but I still like that defensive double up, like you say, for these next few weeks. That the double looks nice as well, and I think Wolves at home this week. I think if they concede to Wolves at home in this week, I'm going to be a lot more worried going into the next few fixtures. Hopefully, they can get a clean sheet in that game. Also struggling Spurs. I mean, Spurs are fourth in the league. Now their defence is ropey, to say the least, at the moment. Dyer obviously dropped out of the side as well. There's a few people I saw kind of around Twitter looking at him, thinking of bringing him in, but he's now maybe too much of a rotation risk to consider. It's Kane, really, isn't it? Kane's the big one. A lot of people wildcarded to have Kane in place for the fixture in the blank game week. But then goes and blanks against Wolves, where we all expected him to get some returns. How are you feeling about him?
I think there's a underlying issue at Spurs with the Conte, you know, sort of murky situation, whether he's going to stay or leave. Like, looks like he's going to leave at the end of the season. I mean, who knows, right? But they're just not a very trustworthy team in terms of attack and defense throughout the season. And we've seen these patterns of play, you know, constantly. So I look back at my Kane decision and think, was I too trapped into thinking he was such a safe asset because of his price point, because of how expensive he actually is? When in return, I should have looked at how much is he actually going to give me in terms of FPL. And I know he's consistent, which is why we all picked him. But Spurs are not a team that you want to rely on right now in this moment in time. So if I was wildcarding now in Gaming 27, I think I would not look at any Spurs assets and try to attack in a different way and maybe even forego Kane, even though a lot of wildcard teams do have him from 26.
I mean, it's 3 goals in his last 8 games for Kane. No double-digit hauls in that period. 2 bonus points in that time, which came in the win against Man City. We've seen over the season, he's, you know, for his price, you know, he started the season at 11.5 million, now 11.7. And the fact it's Harry Kane, and the fact he's got 18 goals this season. I'm almost a bit disappointed by the returns that he's got, because he hasn't hit those big double-digit returns to make us think that he's a captain option for us, for example, because Haaland has been so consistent. I think, you know, Saka is now kind of entering into that thing and that kind of place, and Rashford as well. So although Kane's got that consistency, that kind of ceiling, as we call it, hasn't really been there for us to consider him. And now it looks like Spurs are struggling more than we've seen so far. I mean, Richarlison hasn't had a Premier League goal all season. Yeah. You know, Kulusevski's had the injuries and has been looking good when he's come back in. Son has been completely off the ball. I know he's your favourite player. So if you were wildcarding this week, for example, would you ignore Kane?
For sure. For sure.
Yeah.
I think...
You go Salah.
I think I would even not look at price points too much, because there's options elsewhere. You know, there's not many premium players that you can attack right now that stand out, except Haaland, maybe Salah. But again, Salah blanks in 28. So I'm not sure where you go with that money, but I wouldn't look at money too much. And I just don't think Kane is the right option to go for right now.
Okay, well, that leads us quite nicely onto the next section, which is a team who won, but have been disappointing largely over the season, but do have a good run of fixtures, and they do have a double coming up as well. And that's Chelsea. A 1-0 win against Leeds in the last game, much needed for Potter to get back to winning ways. It's a really nice home game against Everton in the blank in 28. This week, they've got Leicester, who are one of the league's worst defences as well. And then it's a double in 29. You talk about price points. I mean, their players are all very cheap. I mean, Fofana scored, you know, from defence. He's, what, 4.3 million. You've got Kepa still there at 4.5. João Felix as well, 7.6 million. Midfield, it's tricky. I mean, Sterling's the most expensive, but there's kind of worries about his minutes. I think it's Felix to me that I like the look of, and I think he could be a good alternative to Kane.
Exactly. Actually, I'm glad you went there, because if there is a standout pick, and I don't know if it's standout, but a pick you would go for at Chelsea, I think would be Felix. Since the restart, or since he joined, he's been 8th in terms of expected goal involvement for all attackers in the league. So obviously very attacking and obviously very involved and a very high caliber player, right? You can see his quality on the pitch. I want to take a look back at what I said about Kane. I still think Kane is a decent option to have. I just think that you could get more elsewhere. And by that, I mean, when you go Felix, for example, you get a fixture in 27, you get a fixture in 28, and you get a double in 29. So if you're going to get equivalent or similar output from the both, might as well get the guy with a double in 29. So Felix presents himself as a good differential, as well as a good pick to have for the, you know, foreseeable future.
Yep. I mean, one bit of new information we've got from Potter this week is Kai Havertz being on penalties as well. He has not performed this season in terms of FPL. He's, you know, he's played the majority of games, particularly under Potter. He's got 5 goals this season, but I mean, blanked against Leeds, blanked against Spurs, blanked against Southampton, West Ham, Fulham, Liverpool. You know, this isn't exactly encouraging for us to invest in. And I think from watching the games and looking at the stats, Felix looks the best option to me. 3.5% ownership as well. He's getting chances. That's the key thing. His points haven't been great, but he is definitely getting chances in that team. I guess that the kind of decision you've got to make is, do you think Chelsea are going to turn it around? And you said fixtures breed form. They've got the fixtures, haven't they, to really turn things around for Potter, I think, going forward.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, Leicester is a perfect sort of fixture to breed form. I think in Gaming 28, when Haaland blanks, you might see a lot of people move off Haaland into sort of guys like Felix and Watkins, and then get back onto Haaland in Gaming 30. But if you're wildcarding this week, maybe the guy to forego is Kane in order to get a guy like Felix. And for Chelsea, I don't think Havertz is a good option, just because why go there when you have a better option in Felix? But the penalty is something to consider and food for thought, for sure.
It's amazing how quickly things can turn around, isn't it? Because you think all the wild card that you played last week, it was absolutely no to Liverpool players. It was absolutely yes to Harry Kane. And then suddenly Liverpool, you know, put in a 7-0 performance and Spurs lose to Wolves. And you think, oh, actually, we can go without Kane. And now we need to get our Liverpool players back. It's, you know, it's why the wild card is such a... It's such a powerful chip, but you find in some ways it's quite nice to kind of get it out of the way, because, you know, I look at people wildcarding, you know, every game week, you know, there's normally someone around who's played the wildcard or something. I look at their team, I think, wow, that is a really strong team for this week and going forward. But, you know, it's going to look strong, isn't it? Because it's the wildcard team. And after a few weeks, the kind of the landscape of FPL can change quite a lot. But yeah, are you quite relieved to just have played it now? You haven't got to worry about it now for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think today, you know, as I was at least a bit reactionary, but there's a reason for it, because when you're actually wildcarding in a span of, let's say, a day, 2 or 3 days, there's so much to think about, basically 15 players to think about. And it's hard to like really put a lot of thought on every single position you bring in for your FPL team. Whereas now that the wildcard is out of the way, you're relaxed a bit, you don't have many big chips left to play, it's sort of better to sort of focus on single players and single spots in your team. So I feel relieved. I feel like we got very unlucky as wildcarders in 26. It's a lot of points to make up, right? Salah having 21 points is insane. And, you know, missing out on Nunez Halls until we wildcarded him out was unfortunate as well. But it is what it is. And we just keep moving forward.
We're going to see the different directions that wildcarders in 26 go, because at the moment, I think it's pretty safe to say everyone that wildcard in 26 had pretty much the same, the same team. And I'm not saying that as an insult to people. I think the template of the wildcard template team was quite an easy selection, because you needed to get your Brentford players in, you need to get your Brighton players in, you're going to keep your Arsenal, you know, you're going to set yourself up for 28 and 29 and keep those players, and, you know, getting your Newcastle players and things. It was quite an easy selection, I think. There wasn't a huge pool of players, particularly when only two teams really have the double in 27. I mean, we haven't spoken about Southampton too much. I mean, Ward-Prowse definitely failed the audition, didn't he? Missing the penalty. He was probably the only one from Southampton that we'd be considering.
Worthy, yeah.
Yeah, which was a shame. So yeah, that's kind of why we're not speaking about them too much. But yeah, people who went a bit different, so people who went for the likes of Madison and saw him blank will really be hoping that he delivers kind of in the upcoming game weeks. So yeah, I mean, you're happy with how you're... How many kind of Brentford and Brighton players have you got at the moment? I guess you've got 4 or 5?
No, I've got 6.
Got 6? Wow.
Yeah, just... quantity over quality. So 6 in place. I think 27 is where hopefully these doublers have to really shine for this to have worked out. At the same time, the singlers that you bench don't have to shine. So, or you hope don't shine in a good way. So we'll see what happens. It's unfortunate what happened to the wildcarders in 26 again, but 27 is why we made this wildcard happen. And I'm hoping these Brighton assets do come alive and Brentford assets do come alive. The brutal nature of a wildcard where everyone has very similar teams is the one or two players you decide to bench and the one or two players that everyone else decides to play can be a swing of 10 to 20 points, like we saw this week. If you started Mitoma, you got a 10-point, you know, advantage over those that started Marsh, for example. If you started Pinnock over, you know, Henry or Ben Mee, you got a massive advantage there as well. So it's just the nature of the game that we have to accept.
So are you looking to free hit in 28, sorry?
No, not at all. Because I think if you wildcarded in 26 or you wildcarded in 27, ideally you wildcard in order to not free hit in game week 28. Here's the thing, right? In game week 28, I guarantee you a lot of players will have a maximum of 9-10 players. Very few will have 11 players. So I wouldn't fixate on having 11 fielders out there. 10 is more than enough. So again, it's quality over quantity. But for me, I'm looking at game 32, which is when the semifinals for the FA Cup happens, as a good time to free hit. And so I would advise those that might not be aware of when to free hit to look into Game Week 32, because that's probably when you'll need to free hit.
Yep. As you mentioned as well, that Crystal Palace have got a double game week this week as well. We haven't mentioned their players too much. I think we can do it pretty quickly. There's probably one that you might consider, and that's Zaha. He's back to fitness. I don't think we're going to go into defence. I don't think any of the other midfielders are options, and we don't know who's going to start up top. So, yep. I mean, Zaha's an interesting punt, isn't it? I mean, no one's really going to be going there, but, you know, does have a double. I mean, one of those games is City, which obviously isn't the best fixture, and then Brighton away is a tricky double for them as well.
Yeah. I don't think Zaha works because he's taking up a midfield spot and we already have plenty of good midfield options to go for. Plus, he's playing Man City first game, so I just don't think it's worth it. Two Brighton mids, Odegaard or Martinelli or Saka. You know, you have the likes of Rashford there as well. So plenty of players to fill the midfield. But maybe if there was a defensive asset from Crystal Palace, that would interest me. But again, there is no defensive asset at Crystal Palace.
No. Yeah, I mean, my team's a little bit different to us, obviously, because I haven't wildcarded. So I've got one Brentford player at the moment and one Brighton player. So you've got six, I've got two. that's the main difference. You know, I want to bring in Tony, for example, you know, given he's got the double and he's got penalties. The only way I can do that is by selling Haaland, I think. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't fill me with great confidence. But then I look at the fixtures and think, okay, it's obviously a good game against Palace, but then it's a blank and then it's Liverpool. So it's, you know, it's one good game in the next three game weeks, whereas Tony has two doubles and a game. So it's a lot more fixtures for him. It's just nerve-wracking because you're selling, you know, what could be one of the biggest point-scoring players ever in FPL ahead of a game against Palace. But I think over the longer term, that probably is the sensible strategy for me. I could then take a hit and bring in another Brighton defender as well, you know, or maybe even Steele in goal, or McAllister for Odegaard, like I mentioned. So I'll probably be looking at having four players across the doublers this week. But I've got Salah. That's the key. That's the key difference between my team and the other wildcard. So I won't have Haaland probably, but I will have Salah. So I've got to hope that Salah can go big in that as well. Andy, great to talk to you.
Yeah, it was great. I think your team's looking fine. I'd be confident with Salah and my team, and you know, it might go your way, and the doublers and all the wildcarders might struggle as well. So I wouldn't be too, you know, FOMO'd out and really attack the single fixtures, because plenty of fixtures to go around.
All the players have FOMO of Haaland's got to be the biggest one. Even though there's double game week, that is going to be a painful watch on Saturday night.
No comment there. European football returns this week with Chelsea and Spurs playing in the Champions League. My advice would be to hold your transfers until the end of the week to give yourself more information and as much information as possible heading into the Game Week 27. Kelly, Jules, and Sam will be back on Wednesday this week with the official FPL pod. As it was a pleasure to talk to you, and I'll speak to you again soon.
Yep, thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll see you again soon.